Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Welcome to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.com. I'm your host, Connie Whitman. You know that I'm excited that you're here this week. So to help you navigate change, whatever that means for you and whatever's going on in your life, I have a free gift for you. In the show notes, you'll find my communication style assessment. Take that, 5 minutes, not easy peasy, not a difficult thing to do. You'll get two reports. One report will spotlight your natural communication superpowers and really tell you or show you how you're showing up in the world or how people are perceiving you. Remember, people's perception of you become your reality. Flip side, we have blind spots. So your lowest score on the communication style assessment is a blind spot. You'll get a report on that as well so that you understand where that blind spot is. So when you're talking to people not like you, you'll understand how to give your message so that they are in a receptive mode. Again, go to the link in the show notes, and that is my gift to you. Now, my motivational quote today to set us in the mindset for our conversation is by Viktor Frankl. And Viktor says, when we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel like I'm running through my day trying to deliver everything I've promised to others and feel the pressure of people needing things from me, which I interpret as, well, they need it right now. But do they? Do they really need it right now? Or is that my own inner mind saying, you know, over deliver, go, go, go. So as I reflect on today's quote, I think I'm beginning to realize that perhaps I'm creating the chaos I feel on those frantic days. There is something to this. And I am really excited for my guest today, T.S. Thomas. Now, T.S. and I are going to discuss how she's helping people to live calmly ever after, sign me up, by showing them how to balance out their dangerously compassionate nature. She promotes the importance of self-preservation, and she also just launched her personal development book, The Sensitive Stone, A Transformational Journey to Discovering Your Inner Rock, which landed on the number one Amazon bestsellers list. Now, this includes a number one bestseller in four categories under motivational self-help, number one in depression, and number two in psychological pathologies. Her nonfiction content is geared toward helping those with a dangerously compassionate nature. In other words, those who go over and beyond their mental, emotional, spiritual, physical, and financial capacities, all for others so much that they actually lose themselves in the process. So please help me welcome T.S. to the show. So T.S., thanks for being on.
Thank you very much. And I'm glad that I'm here.
I'm glad you're here too. This was, we've had to reschedule and a whole bunch of other things went down, but we are here and I'm excited for this conversation because, you know, T.S., here's the reality. I think people are in overwhelm. We're doing more. We're connected all the time. It's becoming harder and harder and harder to disconnect. We were just talking about that before we recorded the show. And we understand, right, what's going on. And we succumb to sometimes that chaotic, energy that's around us, right?
Yeah. We don't know how to take off our superhero capes.
That's right.
It's a problem. We it's on all the time. It's dirty. And we still don't know how to take it off.
Yeah. To wash it, right? And we take showers, but we don't wash
our superpowers.
Yeah. So first of all, I love the title. So The Sensitive Stone, how do you define, so everybody listening, like, how do you define what a sensitive stone is so that the listeners can say, oh, that's me, or, oh, that's my sister,
because
the book can help, right?
Yeah. I was always being told that I was too sensitive, and there's like a stigma towards someone saying you're too sensitive. So for years it was like, oh, I'm not sensitive. But then I thought about it. I'm like, you know what? I am sensitive. I'm the sensitive one, but now I need to become the sensitive stone. So that means that I can still hold on to my sensitive nature, but I needed to balance it out so that I'm not in dangerously compassionate zone. That's where that sensitive one came from. I was always sensitive, and it was creating a lot of chaos that I became just all over the place all the time. And I would succumb to meltdowns, or I would be angry and just emotionally all over the place. So it made me sensitive. So by my balancing out my headspace, I started to tame that sensitive one nature. And now it's more of a rock. And I'm still transforming. I will always be transforming, just like a teacher always has to learn.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. Here's the thing. 80% of the world are visual learners. So what I love about the sensitive stone is you can be sensitive, but you have to create that hard outer shell as protection, right? Yeah. So to me, that's the visual. And the other thing you just said, as you were saying it, visualizing that you said, I'm always learning and I'm always kind of that reiteration. Well, it's like the stone, right? That it's underwater in the little brook, that it's being washed over and over, and it's tumbling and tumbling and smoothing out its edges and becoming more magnificent, right? As it gets smoother and more beautiful. That's who we are. So I just love that sensitive stone. Wow, that's amazing. And okay, so here's a sales tip I'm going to give you right out of the gate, TS. You have to create like a stone to companion the book. You know, like they have the worry stones. They have the sensitive stone, and have it in colors so people can buy their color that resonates with them.
That's beautiful.
Paint to me, divine intervention.
Creativity always on go.
And that people are now listening going, these two are crazy. And you'd be right. And that's okay. We like being a little crazy.
That's okay. We're vibing.
We're vibing. I like that better, right? So how could someone tell if they've hit that danger zone like you were describing before?
Well, here's the thing. We don't know how to say no, right?
Yeah.
So no matter how, here's a tip. If you find that someone's asking you to do something and you're starting to feel a little overwhelmed, something inside you, like we feel that overwhelm, right? Before we actually say it, something inside us, whether it might be anxiety or we start to feel a little taken aback by it. The minute you feel that, that is when you have to say no. When you don't say no, that is when you hit danger zone. You've already hit danger zone when you don't say no. If you ask me something and I say, well, I can't do it right now, and I stick to that, I didn't hit that danger zone. I'm okay. I'm safe. The minute I say, okay, well, no. Meanwhile, inside, I'm going through it. Inside, I'm fighting. But okay, no one sees what I'm doing inside. No one sees that I'm battling inside. They only see that I said no. So we make it hard for people to accept our no. So you hit danger zone the minute you start feeling that fluttering, that whatever you feel inside,
that is going to hit danger zone.
Yeah. That in itself, that's a warning sign. Just like a heart attack when you're about to feel something, that's a warning sign. So yes, your warning sign to say no is when you start feeling uneasy inside.
And here's the thing. I want everybody to make sure they heard what you said, because you said, you got to say no, but you didn't say no. You said it so much more beautifully. You said, you know what? I can't do that right now. If now you're having a conversation, they might come back. The person might say, oh, I didn't mean you had to do it now. Can you do it in the next maybe 3 weeks?
Absolutely.
Or you could say, I can't do it right now, but if you give me maybe 2 weeks, I could probably fit it in. Yes. It gives an opportunity for negotiation. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but you're setting your boundary and still honoring, trying to help that person, because your nature is that sensitive nature is you want to help, right? You want to serve, but at what cost to self? That's really what we're talking about, right?
Yeah. And the course is really, really expensive. Like I could be a billionaire with the cost. You know what I mean? Like, it's really expensive to be dangerously compassionate. It really is.
Because you don't always know what the boundaries are. And then I would imagine that then you say, no, I can't do that. And then you feel guilty for not helping the person. So again, it's a lose-lose when you're an emotional giver like that, because you're never going to win.
You're never going to win until you work at it. You have to work at it. Because again, if you do not know how to create boundaries, you create damage inside yourself. And even when you get to the point where you learn how to say no, now you have this damage to deal with. So the sooner you begin to learn how to say no and get out of your dangerously compassionate nature, you can start healing yourself from all the pain that you even caused yourself. There's a lot of damage that happens. So now you're in the undoing the damage stage the minute you learn how to pull the brakes.
Yeah. And set the boundaries with clarity, because we only have so much bandwidth, your brain physically, emotionally. And when we're extending, you're burning out. You're stifling the flame on your candle.
Yes.
Instead of burning brighter, you're sizzling it out because you don't have the energy to expel. How can people toughen up? Like, they're listening and they're like, all right, so I clearly need to toughen up a little bit, but I also want to remain compassionate and kind and empathetic. So what are some strategies that you use with your clients?
Number one of the things to toughen up is to toughen. Here's one thing I would do. Look at what you're constantly doing and let that be a guide. For instance, people like us, dangerously compassionate people, we immediately want to offer our help as soon before someone even asks us. So that in itself is a power that you can hold, that you can grasp. The minute someone says, I have all these bills and oh my God, say something like, you know what? I know exactly what you mean. I'm trying to get out of my own debt. This way, before they even get a chance to ask you, you've already set that boundary. They won't ask you if you're saying you're in debt. So sort of like you're sort of reiterating what they're actually saying. It's sort of like reverse psychology. You know, I got to do this in the morning. Oh, I'm just so tired. I need this. I need that. I understand exactly what you're saying. You know, I've been feeling this way lately too. And now this is not saying you never have to help someone. What I'm saying is people like us, we have to learn that we don't know how to hit safe zone yet. Okay, there's people out there that know, they know how to do that. So they can say yes, they can say no, they can say, oh, okay, here's a dollar, here's 20, here's 30, here's 1,000, whatever the case may be. People like us, we have to hit brakes, even when we can. That is the important part. I could have something, I can have money, I can have time, I can have energy. Even when I have it, I have to pull the brakes so that it isn't so hard when I don't have it.
Yeah, because you could deplete yourself without realizing it.
Yes.
It's funny, as you're speaking, remember in the beginning of the show, I talked about my communication style assessment. Mm-hmm. And there's two styles that they're not adversarial. It's not the right word. But when I describe, I think everyone will understand what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. So a heartfelt advocate is one. There's five styles. A heartfelt advocate is one of them. So just like it says, you're a heartfelt advocate. You lead with your heart. You feel deeply. You don't want to say no, right? You come from empathy. I want to help you. I want to help you find a solution. And then on the flip side, we have the innovative organizer, one of the other styles. That's that CEO mentality, that very driven, very direct, almost borderline rude person, because it's get out of my way. I have things I have to do. So if I report to an innovative organizer and I'm a heartfelt advocate, what do you think happens? That innovative organizer, they have projects, they have things that need to get done and they have deadlines. Who are they going to go to over and over and over again? The heartfelt advocate, because they're never going to say no. It's the path of least resistance. And then the heartfelt advocate becomes passive aggressive because they're always choosing me. They're dumping on me.
Yeah.
They're not dumping on you because they're being mean. They just think, I'll ask Tia. She always says yes. She'll do it for me. And it's off their plate. That's all they're thinking. They're not thinking that they're overwhelming you. So this is why we have to take control, because you can't give that heart away over and over again. Right.
It's not easy. And that's why that's literally why those books even exist. You know what I mean? That is because I don't think I've ever seen anything where there's someone is being dangerously compassionate. That's why I even came up with that term. I'm like, what can I say to make people realize how dangerous? Because we don't think compassion is dangerous.
No,
I don't think it's ever been noted that compassion is dangerous. So yes, we don't know the difference between being compassionate and being dangerous. There's a difference. Compassion isn't just, oh, compassion. So I can just deplete myself. I can just fall over and no, there's compassion and there is dangerously compassion. It's a big difference.
We tell if we're being too sensitive, like are there in the book, like how, what are triggers or things that people listening right after the show, they could raise their awareness to say, oh, that's one of the things she mentioned. Like what would some of those cues be for us?
I know for me, and maybe this can resonate with others, when someone says something along the lines of you're not doing enough, for me, that is a trigger. They may not use the word you're not doing enough. They may say something like, oh, you know, I need help, but you know, there's never really anybody around and certain things like that. Like you're not doing enough. Cause then you'll start doing more and more and more and more and more because you're feeling like you haven't done enough for someone. Yeah. And then you become this person that just didn't do enough at all. What happens is you're going to lose yourself because you're going to keep holding on to this. I have to be selfless. And the more selfless you are, the more less of yourself you become.
Yeah.
So start looking at that.
Yeah. And you're not saying be selfish. You're saying be mindful of what. Go ahead.
Be okay. Be okay with selfish. You know why? The same way, there's a balance. Selfish is being selfish for self.
Yeah.
Looking out for myself. You have to be okay with a certain balance because if you're always selfless, again, you will lose yourself. You will never know who you are. You'll look in the mirror and you won't even know who you are because you've never taken the time to cultivate who you are as a person.
So. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, being a middle-aged woman, right, I have my kids and then, you know, we have my husband's mom is still alive. My dad is still alive. So you have, you know, the elder parents and they call us the sandwich generation because I have responsibilities, my business, my husband, my kids, because, you know, they're still here. And then I have responsibilities to, you know, my mother-in-law and my dad. And when I say that, it's not a burden, it's a responsibility. They need our help. They can't go to the doctor alone doing financial stuff. They can't see, they can't hear. So they need our help. Right. And so you feel immediately that you're pulled in all these directions. And I'll tell you, when my mom was ill a couple of years ago and it was during COVID, she couldn't hear. She had tremendous dementia, so she couldn't advocate for herself. And we were trying to be around the clock within the hospital because again, visiting hours and there were so many restrictions. At the same time, my business, I had no business coming and I had no income. I had to reinvent my entire business, right? Because my corporate clients, they all shut down. And so I had no income. I'm working 12-hour days and I'm supposed to be in the hospital. And I remember I was so upset because I was like, I don't want to disappoint my family. You know, they need me, but my family needs me. We have bills. My kids were in college. Like I have responsibility here and there's only so many hours in a day. And I went to my siblings and I said, here's my boundaries. This is what I can do. This is what I can't do. I cannot stay in the hospital overnight because then I have to get on Zoom calls tomorrow and network and speak intelligently with people. I don't have the bandwidth. I don't have the energy to do that. And on top of that, the financial stress of worry and then worrying about my mom. So the level of weight on me was tremendous. You can't breathe. So, but here's the thing. My siblings are amazing. And they were like, we understand. We'll figure it out. What can you do? Right.
Yes.
So they were so receptive and respectful of me and what my bandwidth, right? The reality was the reality. It's hard to articulate that though. If people don't stop and listen, my siblings say, well, we're busy too. Tough. Well, what do you do? Right.
You're so
but my siblings,
it.
Yeah, my siblings were very understanding. I know people don't always have that. So how do we navigate that we're trying to articulate here are my clear boundaries and what I can do and what I can't do when people don't receive that? What do you recommend?
Here's my thing. I always say that human beings do human things, right? We are all human. We receive things differently. There are some people that you can speak to in person. I'm the type of person, I will find a way to speak to anyone in any way. I'm a writer. if I need to write, maybe I can write this person something. Maybe you're not the person I can speak to face to face or call, but maybe I'll send you a text. They will have no choice but to read it. Send an email. Send something. There are ways to say something. I think the problem is we always think that we have to say it face to face. So there's that pushback. You don't know how to say it. I used to be the type of person when I would try to express myself, I would immediately the waterworks. And it was like, I don't want to do that. It's bad enough people are calling me the sensitive one. I don't want to be the sensitive one. I need to toughen up and still express myself in a way where I'm not having a meltdown and they don't feel sorry for me.
Yes.
So talk to them face to face, send a little text, send an email. If you got to send a stork, you know what I mean? Anyway, find a way to tell. People have to know. A lot of times we think that they know. They don't always know. Yeah. People are living, you know, it's hard. Lifing is hard.
Yeah.
So they don't know.
You're right. I can only know my perspective because my head is my brain, right? You only know your perspective. So if we can't figure out how to communicate, again, those boundaries. And here's the other thing too. And T.S., I'll just tell you, when I approached them, I was emotional, but I was very logical. And I said, here's the situation. You need to understand what I'm feeling because you don't know from looking outside, right? Because they had jobs where they were getting a paycheck, right? Yeah. So I says, let me just tell you what's going on. And my husband also lost his job. So we literally had no income coming in. Thank God we had money in the bank. See, that's my financial side. Everybody save for a rainy day. That's my little tip, financial tip. But so thank God we really seriously, we had money. So we weren't going bankrupt, but I approached them. They saw the distress I was in, but I wasn't like, wait. I was like, here's the situation. Here's what I can do. Here's what I can't do. And I have to ask you guys to pick up the slack right now. It is what it is. So I was very rational and logical, but they saw how distressed I was because of the pressure and the burden. And they were amazing. But again, I'm going in, they're going to say, well, you know, she's your mother too. And, you know, our time is valuable too. That was all in my head. And that isn't what I received when I approached them. So I think that we have our perspective and we project what we think is going to be said because we beat ourselves up instead of communicating with honesty and love, right? Respectful love.
Yes.
I think then we get a whole different response, right?
Yeah. And I think a good word, well, two words are very important. People hear these two words, believe it or not. I'm tired. Tell people you're tired. Tell them you're tired. When you say that you're tired, those are the two most powerful words you can probably express to someone where they'll actually receive it. Without the water words, because you want to be able to tell people things before you get to that point where you're erupting.
That's
or melting or withdrawing to the point where no one's ever seeing you, because that's how that depression happens. That's how the pushback, you lose yourself. Or if it isn't happening already, this is one of those ways you can get out of it. Start telling people that you're tired. It is very important to say that.
Yeah. Do you think that is the start when we're emotional? And I'm not saying people that are depressed have to be emotional, but do you think that's like almost like the start point where the hole in the dam, if you will, the water starts coming through and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger because we don't know how to navigate it? Have you found that writing the book and doing your research?
Yes. Definitely. When I started writing this book, I was just journaling things down because I would be having bad days and then something good would happen and I would write it down and I would try to mimic that day so that I can have that moment, constantly have those moments. But I noticed that when I wasn't staying on it, I would go back to that dark place. So it was kind of like I used my book as like my own little Bible.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, even now, like I'll pick it up and I'll sort of like reiterate these things, reinforce these things for myself, because I realize if I don't stay on it, I'm going to go back because I'm only human.
That's right.
I'm only human. If I don't stay on it, I'm going to go back to that dark space. If I don't keep on building, I'm going to go back to that same place. But I had to also realize that I was tired and I was tired. I was tired of feeling the way I was feeling. And if I didn't do anything about it, who knows? You know, that's just it. That's just life.
And here's the thing, even when you learn these skills, you said it, you have to keep going back to your own book and going, hello, read your book. Like, why aren't you doing it? Because we're human. Life has the ups and downs. And when we're in that down mode, it's hard to see with clarity because you're an emotional being that you're feeling things at such a deep heart-centered level, right? Yeah. That it's hard to see the forest from the trees when we're in that place. So I love that you said, you like, time to go back to my book and read my book again.
I
love that. We're always learning. Yes, we're always learning. And I think too, like you said, you go back and read your book. I think that was adorable, but because each time you read your book, you're like, well, I forgot that. Or, you know what? I could even do this at a higher level now because you get better and better and better at developing those skills that you've outlined in the book, right?
Yes. Yes. It's very important. Very important. And just, it helps me stay present. It helps me really stop thinking about the past. It isn't real. You know, I'm still thinking about things that I shouldn't be thinking about. I'm packing my bags and going to the past. Why? You know what I mean? And I can't stay present. So I have to try to say, okay, you know what? Let me open this book. I remember this day. I remember how this felt and what did I do on this day? And just taking a moment and just really assessing what I'm feeling. Cause like I said, when I don't take the time to do that, I end up going through these things all over again when you don't have to. The thing is, the most powerful thing in the world is knowing that you don't have to in that headspace. How beautiful is it to know that you don't have to be in the dark? That is an amazing thing to know that.
Choice. We all have choice. So you have to choose to do something to pull yourself out of it. And here's the other thing, you know, it's real. Like, depression is real. Sadness is real. Overwhelm is real. We live in chaos. The world is chaotic. So it's not like we're saying, you know, become a monk and go up on the mountain and live up there. You know, that's not real. I mean, maybe it's real for a monk. It's not real for most of us. So we have to find ways to navigate this without killing ourselves.
Constantly. It's just like eating food. Like, I'm going to get hungry. I have to feed myself. Otherwise I'll starve. I'll pass out. I'll get weak. I won't make it. So your brain, your mind, your spirit, it gets hungry. It gets hungry for happiness. And when you don't have that happiness, when you aren't feeding yourself happiness, you're going to be sad. You're going to starve with sadness. So you have to feed yourself constant happiness.
Tell me how your book is organized. Like, do you have ways that people could discover and affirm this inner rock, right, that we're talking about, so that they can still be emotional, but they have those clear hard shell boundaries, if you will. Talk to me about the book. How do you help people go through it?
Well, so there's a starting in the beginning. There's like a part one, part two, and a part three. In part one, you're getting to the root of it. Like, how did I get here? Because there's a root. So there's going to be steps. You're going to start from the very beginning. You're going to start from the roots. Then you're going to go to your mindset. Then you're going to go to undoing the damage. And how you undo the damage is you start healing yourself by doing little things for yourself, making love with yourself, knowing how it feels to feel good with yourself. And then at the very end, you'll do those affirmations and constantly exercising. So there's definitely steps to get to it.
Yeah. And it's practice, right? TS, it's practice. It's not like, you read the book, you got it. Go forth and be happy forever. It's not how the human brain works. No.
I promise you, it is not just a book. I promise you, like, you're going to really discover some things that you're going to say, oh my God, I didn't even realize I was doing that. I didn't know it was dangerous. Again, danger. That is the key word, danger.
It's fascinating that, it sounds like you wrote this book for or out of your own needs.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then you're like, wait a minute, this worked for me. Can it help somebody else? Like, this is amazing. So I often think that the best deliverables out there, like books and things like that, come from our own needs. And then once we figure out how to move that needle or make that change in a positive way, yeah. and you write it down like you did, you document it, right? You started by journaling and you thought, wait a minute, there's a pattern here.
Yeah.
And then you could, because everybody doesn't know how to seek those patterns or see those patterns. So, you know, you talked about the mindset. And I think that we all have stuff in our minds that if somebody doesn't ask us a question for us to reflect upon it and use the word assess, I love that word too, but to ask me that question, let me pause, let me assess, let me percolate on it. Now I can make a decision because I see things with more clarity. It's almost like you're through the book, you're shining a light on people for them to see things with clarity. Is that a true statement?
That is exactly what it is. And like, even just going through life, like we were talking about, like the ups and the downs and stuff like this, I would say another thing to start doing is assess your mess. So that's assessing your mental space, your emotional space, your spiritual space. Just assess it. Assess it. Assess how you're feeling. You know what? I'm not feeling good mentally, or just emotionally, I'm not feeling good. Or even physically, like, oh, my body is aching. I don't feel like doing this. A lot of times we don't know why we're crazy. We think it's so much worse than what it really is. Sometimes you're probably just tired. Maybe you just need a nap.
That's right.
Or maybe your head is just hurting, and maybe it's not the apocalypse just because you got a headache. But when you're in that headspace, it's going to seem like that. And when people are constantly coming at you and you don't know how to say no, it just builds on that apocalypse. That's not even really there.
Yeah. This is such a timely, I think, book. I just saw a statistic article I read this week, actually, and it was saying in 2019, I think it was 2019. So it was fairly recent, but the age of teenage 13 to 17, it's 14% are claiming they were depressed. Post 2020. Now they've done the research this year, 2022, and they said it was up over 20%. That, can I tell you, that broke my heart, because I thought, oh, these kids, they're still kids. They're living in this crazy world because things are still a little crazy out there. They don't have the tools they don't have life experience to say, well, wait a minute, that's not real. You know, just move on or whatever. Or that person didn't know what they were saying. They don't have the life skills to be able to discern that. So this book, I think, is a useful tool for parents that have kids that might be struggling and have felt isolated by being home through COVID, because emotionally their maturity of not being in school and interacting with their peers, right?
Yeah.
Some are felt more isolated than others. I think this book could be a good tool for parents.
Yeah, because they can assess that, it can teach their children to assess, because children become adults.
Yes.
You know, we were children once, and had I had a book like this years ago, or had someone spoken to me about these things that are in my book, I would have grown up with a more emotional balance.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I wouldn't be so alone. And this is just anybody. This is not a blame responsible thing. This is just life in itself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I had to go through these experiences in order to like catch myself. You know, and it's like, oh my God, this can help this person. Let me write this down. A lot of times I just go around telling people, I'll just like, oh, and guess what? You know this. And I'm always like doing things like that, you know?
Because you want to help. It's, you know, that's your emotional giving. That's how you're wired, my friends, right? It is what it is. But I agree that if we had these tools as children, right, how much more stable is not the right word, but more in control of our emotional being, that we wouldn't deplete ourselves, right? Because we think we're being selfish again and egotistical and all those other negative words that come into play. We are out of time, but listen, everybody, a couple of things. So first, if you have a question, please reach out to TS directly. And I'm going to give you her email. It will also be in the show notes. So don't worry. Mm-hmm. You can click and find her, but it's AMAOneJoy@yahoo.com. And the book link will be in the show notes. So if you are interested in getting a copy, do you have the soft cover and the Kindle version available?
Yes.
Beautiful. Yes. I will put that link in the show notes, guys, so that if you think you or someone in your family or friends can use this, or you know of a mom that's worried about a child that might be feeling a little isolated after COVID, by all means, buy the book. What a beautiful gift, right? To give someone a tangible tool to help them become, and I'm going to just say the stone. I like that.
The stone.
I want to say the name of the book again. I'm going back in my notes. The Sensitive Stone, A Transformational Journey to Discovering Your Inner Rock. I just love that whole visual in that title. Just beautiful. Just beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being on and sharing, being vulnerable with me and with us to share your experience. Because if we don't share the darkness inside of us, how can we help others shine light, right? We have to shine the light within first. So thank you so much, TS. You're a delight. You were a love. We were hanging out before, giggling all over the place. So this was a fun way to end my day. So thank you so much for being on.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, true pleasure. And I hope you will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together. No matter where you are on your journey of change, whatever that is for you. Like, I hope that TS today and her ideas, her book, or something I said, or a story I shared, maybe the story with my siblings, I hope it makes you think or approach things a little bit differently, because hearing information is beautiful, right? It's nice to learn, but then taking that advice, recommendation, tip, strategy, and applying it in your life where you are, that's where magic starts happening. And that's where we can start to create that ease and grace in our life. We all deserve to be joyous and happy. Not that life doesn't suck sometimes. It does. But I want everybody to feel joy and love every day. So I hope that the show provides that for you. I hope guests like TS and myself and our conversations bring you joy, of course, but also maybe help you share with someone you love or yourself. So thank you again, TS. Thank you all for joining me. And thanks for tuning in to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.com. I really do hope you have an inspired week filled with wonderful change that helps you move the needle to feel that joy and happiness that we all deserve. I love you, and I'll see you all next week. Have a great one.